this is something that the previous NLRB was not doing. And so we're grateful that there is a little bit of an opening for protecting workers. That being said, we do need to pass the PRO Act. We need to pass a lot of different legislation. We need to fund the NLRB more. The NLRB needs to get even more assertive in the sorts of ways that it is helping workers, because the laws are, as they are very broken. Now, Joe Biden has, did invite our president, Chris Smalls, to the White House. And Chris Smalls laid out the things that need to be done. If we can't get
the PRO Act. We have 10 seconds, Matt.
He needs to do something. If we can't get the PRO Act done, he needs to sign an executive order right away. We need help. All workers do.
Well, we want to thank you both for being with us, Matt Cusick and Tristan Dutchin, organizers with the Amazon Labor Union, who were fired this month after the first successful organizing effort in the company's history at Amazon's Staten Island JFK 8 warehouse. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm.
At KBOO, we're always busy bees preparing wonderful programming for you to enjoy. Now, during our spring membership drive, we need some money to go with that honey. Help us raise $56,000 by May 28th to support our efforts to pollinate the media landscape with locally produced, independent, people-powered community radio. Donate right now at kboo.fm/give or tap the donate button in the KBOO mobile app.
We're excited to launch a new show on KBOO Community Radio called Understanding Homelessness with Dr. Marisa Zapata, a professor from Portland State University and director of the Homelessness Research and Action Collaborative. Each show will explore a different aspect of homelessness through the lens of people with lived experience, as well as other experts in research, policy, and programs. Tune in at 11 a.m. on the first and third Fridays of every month.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this spring membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News, a lawsuit settlement creates a new rule for houseless sweeps in Portland. Oregon has new protections for workers in extreme heat and wildfire conditions. And in international news, a Palestinian journalist is killed while reporting in the West Bank. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, May 11th, 2022. We'd like to remind you that this is our spring membership drive, and you can become a member at any time during this show by going online to kboo.fm/give or texting KBOO to 44321. I'm Althea Billings. Portland will have to abide by new rules when it comes to sweeping houseless camps from city streets, thanks to a settlement from a class action lawsuit. The lawsuit was brought against the city over a year ago, saying that the city and its contractors were illegally disposing of people's belongings in sweeps. The settlement from that lawsuit creates new rules for how those sweeps have to go. First, campers will get 72 hours notice before the sweep. They'll have info ahead of time of where their belongings will be kept after so they can be retrieved, and they'll have an hour to move once the sweep starts. Portland will have to keep any items for 30 days, and prescriptions in their bottles, ID cards, credit cards, and money will be kept longer. Prescriptions until they expire, and cards for a year. The settlement also requires that Portland keep a database of personal property from the campsites. Portland will also reprioritize which camps it sweeps. So-called low-impact camps are ones that aren't near schools, childcare facilities, and parks, and aren't in a flood or wildfire danger zone. Low-impact camps will be less of a priority for sweeps than quote-unquote high-impact camps, which include camps located in the spaces we listed and ones that have confirmed criminal activity or uncontained debris. Plaintiffs are glad about the rule change. They didn't get a monetary settlement for their suit, but instead modifications to the sweep process. Franz Brueggemeyer is an attorney with the Oregon Justice Resource Center, which represented the class action plaintiffs. Brueggemeyer wrote in a statement, quote, "This settlement represents a real victory by the plaintiffs in compelling the city of Portland to follow the law and to make it clear to people impacted by sweeps how and when it will carry them out. This does not mean an end to sweeps or the constant trauma and harms that come with those removals, but we hope it will provide clarity to those living outside in public to be better able to reduce some of the harms of being removed from the places they are living," end quote. Workers in Oregon will have greater protection from extreme heat and wildfires this summer thanks to new state rules. The Oregon Occupational Safety and Health Division, OSHA, adopted permanent job site rules yesterday that require employers to protect workers from extreme heat and wildfire smoke. The heat rules require employers to provide sufficient shaded areas, ample water, and increasingly frequent rest breaks as temperatures rise. They also require employers to develop heat prevention plans and to train employees and supervisors about heat illnesses. The rules set standards that employers must meet to protect workers from heat in farm worker housing. The wildfire smoke rules require employers to make respirators available as the air quality reaches unhealthy levels, or require workers to wear respirators if air quality levels spike above a very unhealthy 251. They also recommend that employers consider relocating when air quality is unhealthy. Raina Lopez is the executive director of PCUN, Oregon's Farm Workers Union. Lopez said, quote, "Concerns remain regarding some areas of these rules, but it's a good start to improving conditions for farm workers," end quote. The heat rule takes effect on June 15th, and the wildfire rules go into effect July 1st. It's National Nurses Week. At hospitals in Oregon, nurses are working with management to get new union contracts. Eric Tegedoff has more.
It's National Nurses Week, and nurses in Oregon are celebrating with a call to complete contract negotiations. Nurses at Providence Willamette Falls in Oregon City are holding an informational picket today. Jay Formick is a registered nurse at the hospital and member of the Oregon Nurses Association. He says negotiations have been on the table since last year.
We're calling attention to the struggle we're having with management at Providence Willamette Falls Hospital coming to agreement on a contract.
Formick says nurses want language that guarantee breaks beefed up in their contract, as well as ensuring safe staffing levels and wage increases that keep up with growing inflation. At their sister hospital, St. Vincent Medical Center, nurses authorized a strike last week. Formick believes the strike can be avoided if management at St. Vincent offers workers a fair contract. He says otherwise, hospitals such as his will feel the consequences of this strike.
The Cathedral Hospital in the Providence system will be vastly reduced in its capacity. Patients will be shunted off to all the other hospitals, including our hospital in Oregon City, and that will only put more pressure on the nurses.
In a statement, Providence says nurses rejected their offers to engage a neutral federal mediator to speed up negotiations. It says a strike authorization announcement will further delay meaningful discussion. Formick says nurses aren't to the point of authorizing a strike at the Willamette Falls Hospital, but he says they have filed complaints about unfair labor practices against Providence during the negotiation process. Formick emphasizes that the purpose of negotiations is to benefit patients.
We're going to fight for proper staffing levels so our patients get nurse attention that is appropriate to their needs. And I sure hope management will see the light and get on board with us.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
An estimated 107,621 Americans died from drug overdoses in 2021. That's a 15% increase over 2020, which had also been a record year. The U.S. has now passed 1 million overdose deaths in the nearly 20 years the CDC has been collecting data on it. About 70% of 2021's fatalities were caused by fentanyl, a powerful synthetic opioid. Many of the people who died thought they were taking a different painkiller or a recreational drug, not fentanyl. There has been a nearly 50-fold increase in illicit pills containing fentanyl between 2018 and 2021. Dr. Nora D. Volko is director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse. Dr. Volko said, quote, "We as a nation have to say, what is it that we can do to avoid that increase in deaths happening again? What is it that we're doing wrong?" In March, two students at Portland's Leotis V. McDaniel High School died from fentanyl in the same weekend. Officials expect Russia to push beyond Donbas in Ukraine, and the Senate will vote on abortion rights. With those stories and more, it's Mary Sherman with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The next few months could see us moving along a more unpredictable and potentially escalatory trajectory.
Director of National Intelligence Avril Haines expects Russia to expand its Ukraine offensive beyond the Donbas region. Testifying before the Senate Armed Services Committee, Haines noted Moscow uses nuclear rhetoric to deter the U.S. from increasing aid.
With tensions this high, there is always an enhanced potential for miscalculation, unintended escalation, which we hope our intelligence can help to mitigate.
The House is expected to approve $40 billion in additional Ukraine funding. The Senate will vote today on a federal abortion rights bill in response to a leaked Supreme Court draft opinion indicating Roe v. Wade could be overturned. Nevada Democrat Jacqueline Rosen.
Anti-choice politicians are working to eliminate reproductive rights. Make no mistake, this will cost women's lives.
The bill doesn't have enough support to pass, but the vote would put lawmakers on record during a midterm election year. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen suggested access to abortion results in positive financial outcomes for women.
Eliminating the right of women to make decisions about when and whether to have children would have very damaging effects on the economy and would set women back decades.
Meanwhile, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said should the GOP take control of the chamber, he would not support killing the filibuster to pass federal abortion restrictions. Most Senate Republicans believe abortion is a matter for the states. Lisa Cook was confirmed to serve on the Fed's Board of Governors, becoming the panel's first Black woman member. After the expected confirmation of Philip Jefferson, two Black board members will serve simultaneously for the first time. The national average gas price hit a new high of $4.11 Tuesday. Adjusted for inflation, prices are still below 2008's peak. Analysts expect another jump for the Memorial Day weekend. New York Congressman Tom Reed stepped down Tuesday, more than a year after he was accused of sexual misconduct by a former lobbyist.
It has been an honor to serve with you all from both parties. I love this institution as it still exemplifies what is best about our government. We are the people's house.
The Republican initially said the accusations were false, but later apologized in a statement. The House passed a resolution providing legal protection for staffers who unionize. The effort stems from anonymous stories posted on social media earlier this year documenting the financial struggles of congressional staff. Tesla CEO Elon Musk says he would reinstate former President Donald Trump's Twitter account, calling the ban following the January 6th attack morally wrong.
I don't own Twitter yet, so this is not like a thing that will definitely happen, because what if I don't own Twitter? But my opinion, and Jack Dorsey, I want to be clear, shares this opinion, is that we should not have permabans.
Trump has repeatedly said he prefers to stay on his own new platform, Truth Social. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our eTrust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
A female journalist for Al Jazeera was shot and killed covering an Israeli raid on the occupied West Bank town of Jenin today. Shireen Abu Akla, a Palestinian reporter for the broadcaster's Arabic language channel, was also a U.S. citizen. She was shot and died soon afterwards. The Qatar-based network interrupted its broadcast to announce her death. It called on the international community to, quote, condemn and hold the Israeli occupation forces accountable for deliberately targeting and killing our colleague, end quote. Another member of the group of journalists pinned down by Israeli sniper fire, Palestinian Ali Al-Samoudi, was hospitalized in stable condition after he was shot in the back. Al-Samoudi said from the hospital, quote, they shot us for no reason. We, a group of journalists, were there wearing our full press uniforms in addition to the helmets with the word press written on them in large letters, as big as the whole world. The Israeli military said its forces came under attack and that they fired back. The military said it's investigating the event and looking into the possibility that the journalists were hit by the Palestinian gunmen. Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett said, quote, "There is a considerable chance that armed Palestinians who fired wildly were the ones who brought about the journalists' unfortunate death," end quote. Later, the Israeli military chief, Lieutenant General Aviv Kochavi, said, quote, "At this stage, we cannot determine by whose fire she was harmed, and we regret her death," end quote. Video footage demonstrates Palestinian gunmen running through a narrow street, with one of them shouting that a soldier has been wounded. Officials say no Israelis were hurt in the incident, indicating the gunman shot a journalist instead. A separate video aired by Al Jazeera shows the journalist lying on the side of a road next to a wall. Gunfire is present in the background. It was unclear if the two videos were shot at the same location, and neither one showed the source of the gunfire. Both reporters were wearing blue flak jackets, clearly marked with the word press. Israel proposed a joint investigation and autopsy with the Palestinian Authority, which refused the offer. The journalist, Shireen Abu Alaq, 51, was born in Jerusalem. She began working for Al Jazeera in 1997 and regularly reported on camera from the Palestinian territories. A group of seven reporters went to cover the raid early Wednesday. All were wearing protective gear that clearly marked them as reporters, and they passed by Israeli troops so the soldiers would know that they were there. There were allegedly no militants or other civilians in the area, only the reporters and the army. No other clashes or shootings were evident in the immediate area. The Israeli military's chief spokesman told Army Radio that the two journalists were standing near Palestinian gunmen. They said the militants were terrorists who were shooting at Israeli troops and likely hit the reporters instead. Israel has carried out near daily raids in the occupied West Bank in recent weeks amid a series of attacks inside Israel, many of them allegedly carried out by Palestinians from in and around Jenin. Condolences came in from across the Arab world. The U.S. ambassador to Israel, Tom Nieds, called for a thorough investigation and confirmed the reporter was an American citizen. Israelis have long been critical of Al Jazeera's coverage, but authorities are said to allow its journalists to operate freely. A number of Palestinian reporters have been wounded by rubber-coated bullets or tear gas while covering demonstrations in the West Bank and East Jerusalem. Two Palestinian journalists were shot and killed by Israeli forces while filming violent protests along Gaza in 2018. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on Imagine Black's primary election endorsements. At 6, it's Rhythm Nation with Peter Marks, then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with a 40% chance of rain and a low of 40 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be rainy with a daytime high of 50. Today in history, in 868, a copy of the Mahayana Buddhist Diamond Sutra is printed in China. It is the oldest known dated printed book. The quote of the day comes from Spanish surrealist artist Salvador Dalí, who was born today in 1904. Dalí said, quote, "Those who do not want to imitate anything produce nothing." Many Oregonians are concerned about the impact of pesticides and chemicals on local watersheds and the environment. But the sponsor of a bill that gives HOA residents the power to opt out of chemical sprays for their lawn says Oregon residents may not even know about their rights. Chance Dorland has the story.
As the safety debate over pesticides and other chemicals often used for lawn and property maintenance continues, Oregon residents now have more options than ever. But are they aware of their rights? Beaver State residents living in homeowner associations are now able to opt out of previously mandated chemical sprays. State Representative Courtney Neron sponsored House Bill 2409, which went into effect on January 1st. She says more outreach is needed to make sure her constituents and other Oregon residents understand the change.
It allows homeowners to make informed decisions about whether or not they want pesticides applied on their property, including herbicide, insecticide, etc. as might be required by their HOA.
Neron introduced House Bill 2409 during the 2021 legislative session, and it was signed into law last May. She explains there has been some confusion over what the bill allows HOA residents to opt out of, noting that it does not allow Oregon residents to forego all landscaping care. Homeowners now have more choice in what chemicals are or are not sprayed on their property, while still having to maintain their lawns in other ways they may believe are safer for their health. Neron adds that an information campaign may be needed to better get out the word.
Going forward, an education campaign would still be beneficial for people to understand their options and potentially even understand and have a bit of education about common chemicals that are used.
Nonprofit Beyond Toxic supports community-driven environmental justice in Oregon. Pesticide Program Manager Jennifer Isola says more work needs to be done.
There are a lot of homeowners that we've heard from since this bill has passed with a lot of concerns about implementation and ensuring that their homeowners association is aware of this bill and giving them the opportunity to opt out of landscape services.
Isola adds that opting out does not necessarily mean taking yard work into your own hands, noting that many Oregon companies offer landscaping services without the use of herbicides, insecticides, and other harmful chemicals. For Oregon News Service, I'm Chance Dorland.
The Prairie Island Indian community is using nuclear waste funds for a net zero carbon goal. The tribe plans to install solar panels, make energy-efficient upgrades, and retrofit buildings to run on electricity. Dr. Anthony Leizowitz has more on that story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Since the 1970s, members of the Prairie Island Indian community of Minnesota have lived in the shadow of a nuclear power plant, and nuclear waste is stored next to the reservation.
Obviously, our tribal members are nervous to be living next door to all of this. We don't even get our power from Xcel Energy, which owns and operates the Prairie Island Nuclear Generating Plant.
That's Tribal Council Vice President Shelley Buck. She says that in exchange for storing nuclear waste on the island, Xcel Energy pays into a state fund. A few years ago, tribal leaders successfully pitched legislators on an idea, using that fund for projects that help the reservation reach net zero carbon emissions. Over a three-year period, the tribe plans to install solar, make energy efficiency upgrades, and convert buildings to run entirely on electricity.
Our history and our energy story has been negatively linked to the nuclear power plant and nuclear waste storage site. We want to change that narrative and use that energy production as a positive force, not only for our tribe today, but for the next seven generations, as our Dakota ways teach us.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
The governor of Oklahoma vetoed a popular bill to help the state and local tribes better stem drunk driving. With that story and more, it's Art Hughes with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Art Hughes in for Antonio Gonzalez. Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt vetoed a bill aimed at increasing cooperation between state agencies and tribal judicial systems, particularly to get drunk drivers off the road. The bill won approval from 96% of the legislature. In vetoing the bill, Stitt claimed it is a wolf in sheep's clothing that hands jurisdictional authority over to the tribes. Among the tribal leaders criticizing Stitt's decision is Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma Chief Gary Batten. He called the veto decision petty and does nothing but hurt public safety. The former chairman of the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe faces up to 20 years in prison for each of three extortion counts after a federal jury convicted him of those and other charges. 55-year-old Cedric Cromwell also faces a maximum fine of $250,000 after the convictions, which also include bribery and conspiracy charges. The jury also convicted the owner of a Rhode Island architecture and design firm. The jury agreed with prosecutors that Cromwell accepted three bribes, including cash, to protect the design firm's contract to build a resort and casino. He's scheduled to be sentenced in September. 2 years after it was first introduced, a bill to establish an American Truth and Reconciliation Commission on boarding schools gets its first hearing in Congress this week. The commission is designed to address the ongoing trauma Native Americans suffer from a century of abuse, sexual assault, and forced family separation at government-sanctioned boarding schools. The bill was first introduced by then-Congresswoman Deb Haaland. The effort is now championed by Kansas Democrat Sharice Davids, a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation. In addition to the hearing, the House Committee on Natural Resources is taking written public testimony until May 26th. The National Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition urges boarding school survivors and their families to submit their experiences to the committee. A group of law professors is critical of a federal appeals court ruling in March that cleared the way for a land swap to create a road through a national wildlife refuge in Alaska. KNBA's Trip J. Krause has more on the legal battle over the swap.
In March, the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled 2-1 in favor of allowing a road between King Cove and Cold Bay. If approved, the road would cut across the Eisenbeck National Wildlife Refuge on the Alaska Peninsula. But a group of 25 law professors joined environmental advocates and filed an amicus brief in a lawsuit opposing the road. During the Trump administration, Interior Secretaries reversed a 2013 agency decision from the Obama administration to deny the road. The brief outlines policy and regulatory concerns about that reversal. The law professors say that the Trump administration secretaries did little to prove a need for the road to reverse previous agency policies. They also say the swap violates environmental laws and the Alaska National Lands Conservation Act, or ANILCA. The professors, who represent institutions from across the lower 48, seek an en banc or full court ruling on the decision to allow the land exchange. Environmental advocates say that a ruling in favor of the road would create a cascade of regulation issues on so-called national public lands. For National Native News, I'm Trip J. Krause.
Native residents boosted Arizona's overall coronavirus vaccination rate, according to an analysis by the Salt Lake City Tribune of a recent Centers for Disease Control and Prevention report. The report finds Arizona is the only state where vaccination rates in rural areas outpaced those in urban places. Those areas have a high percentage of Native residents. The CDC finds Navajo and Apache counties had a vaccination rate that exceeds 86% through January of this year. Urban areas in the state stayed below 70%. Health experts told the Tribune they credit the high rate to effective messaging by tribal health officials, urging vaccinations to keep elders and others safe. With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael says a divided America doesn't add up.
The media is saying the Supreme Court reversing Roe v. Wade will divide the country irreparably. The media has been playing that divided America song so often it's becoming the new anthem, while media and government ignore what unites us. 80% of Americans support a woman's right to choose. Even more want the rich to pay a fair share of taxes. We want lower prices, affordable housing. They take away our vote, already made anemic by voter repression and the two-party system. They convince us that our neighbors are trying to take what we have when they are making sure very few of us get enough. I don't want to be one of them, but how do I make them more like us when they control the media, the police, the prices? Seems all we can do is buy their products, pay our taxes, salivate for a lower interest rate, buy one, get one free. One what? For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to a spring membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, May 11th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem and Dan Raphael. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Art Hughes, Chance Dorland, and Mary Sherman. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. Thank you. We are currently in our spring membership hive drive, so now is a great time to get involved with KBOO. If you'd like to become a member and support your local community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth. We're speaking with the director of Imagine Black about their endorsements for the 2022 May primary election.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Primary elections in Oregon are on May 17th, and voters have until then to mail in their ballots or return them to a drop box. Today on News In Depth, we're talking endorsements. Endorsements are an important part of the campaign process for candidates, and they can aid voters in learning about which candidates they may prefer. I'm speaking with Joy Elise Davis, the director of Imagine Black, about the candidates that earned their endorsement. Imagine Black is a Black-led and Black-servicing 501c4 organization. We discuss how their endorsement process went, what the importance of endorsements are, and what their preferred candidates have to offer. So it's primary election season in Oregon, and your organization, Imagine Black, endorsed a number of candidates across state, county, and local elections. Why was it important to create and publish these endorsements this year?